This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, and today I have with me YBP Wethamurthy, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of National Unity and Social Wellbeing. Thank you for joining us today, Minister.
Good morning, Lynn.
So first of all, I'd like to start us off with the question of national unity. What does that actually mean for you?
Well, national unity, it's quite a challenging portfolio, I would say. Because the expectation of the people is quite high, especially in the new government. People want to see change. People want to see greater initiatives being done to bring the Malaysian population together as a united family. So those are the challenges, the main challenges.
Would you say currently whether we actually have national unity, considering the Bumiputra policy, the social contract, and the occasionally inflammatory comments that we see from certain individuals bandied about through our media, do we actually have national unity at this point in time?
Yes, I would most certainly say so. The people are united. If you talk to the people on the ground or at the grassroots level, be them Malay, Chinese, Indian, Sabahan, Sarawakians, the people are united. On and off, yes, we do have issues on and off, but most of the time, these issues are stirred by politicians with vested interests. Now, before I go into that, I would also like to share about an event that took place on Saturday last week. In Ampang Melaka, we had a mega Perpaduan event, a unity event. And it was attended by communities from all races in Ampang. And I noticed in the surrounding areas there, that was the place was surrounded by flats. And the participants at the event were mainly grassroots people. And when I speak to them, they seem to be happy. They seem to be united. They don't care what is being said out there. They tell me, "Why, we don't worry. You know, people will say whatever they want to say. But we have an agenda. We are, you know, we love the country. We are all here together." And as I mentioned, you know, on and off, there are issues. But these issues are manipulated by politicians for their own vested interests. So I think we should actually curb the politicians from raising this. You know, something should be done. Right? That's my personal opinion.
How do we go about that, Minister?
Well, that's the most sensitive part. You know, you can't... one side, there's freedom of speech. You know, we talk about our fundamental right under the Constitution, right to express one's opinion. But ever since the change of government, we see that there has been a rise in race and religious issues raised by certain politicians. And then it is blown out of proportion and all sorts of things are done, you know, like demonstrations and so forth. But I think if only we can make the politicians understand that the elections are over, you know, it is time to unite the people. If I may say this, in the Western world, immediately after the elections, politicians unite for one reason, for the sake of the country. So like it's a pity that we don't practice that in our country. The politics continue. The losers are not able to accept, and the losers do all sort of things to kind of destabilize the government and to give the impression to the people that this government is not fit to rule. But if only they see the larger picture of the country, of the needs of the country, then I think, you know, we will be successful as a nation.
Speaking of freedom of speech, though, Minister, there have been calls recently for hate speech to be included as an amendment in the Sedition Act. And I was wondering as to your thoughts about this, because you have spoken about hate speech laws before. And what's your take on it?
We had a look at the proposed laws previously. There were four ministers. We had a discussion. We had a look at the law. After a lengthy discussion, we informed the cabinet that we are of the view that the existing laws could be tightened. We decided that there was no reason to enact a new law. Whereas there are ample provisions in the penal code which could be used to take action against those who create hatred among the society. Perhaps there needs to be an amendment to the penal code and the Sedition Act to not only tighten but also to loosen up certain provisions. For example, the Sedition Act is too wide. The offence is not clearly defined. Anybody who has, for example, I think the term used in the Sedition Act is the tendency, you know, to create a situation. The word tendency is vague. So perhaps terms like that could be redefined, and if we could amend those laws and make the law clearer, I think it will be better that way rather than enacting a new law.
What about discussions of initially abolishing the Sedition Act? Is that no longer on the table?
At the moment, it is being looked at by the Minister for Home Affairs. In principle, I could say the government is in favour of abolishing the Sedition Act, but there are some elements in the Sedition Act that needs to be preserved. Especially when it comes to the rights of the royalty or the criticism against the royalty. We are quite a sensitive society, so we don't want the people to create unrest by criticizing the royalty unnecessarily. So there is a general view that those provisions need to be protected. So I guess the Home Minister is looking at it, and perhaps it will take a bit of time before the necessary announcements are made.
Right. Now, Minister, coming back to national unity, when discussing national unity and measures to promote national unity amongst the people, oftentimes people like to advocate simple and elegant solutions, like, for example, having single-stream schools rather than having vernacular schools. But in your view, is there actually a one-size-fits-all sort of solution to solving the problem of national unity?
No, I don't think there's one, you know, one solution, one standard solution for, you know, national unity. I think we have to understand each other's culture, religion, and our background, you know. So you cited the vernacular school as an example. Some people are of the view that it divides the community, whereas those proponents of the vernacular schools will obviously defend it, you know. If in these situations, I would think that we have to find a way to bring those students from the vernacular schools and the Sekolah Kebangsaan together. There can be so many ways to bring them together. So we cannot deny, or we can't say that, you know, we have to abolish the vernacular schools, you know. So we have to find other innovative ways to bring children from these schools to be together.
But then what is the priority of your ministry here when it's talking about national unity? Is it uniting different races, or is it also expanded to things like bridging class divides? Where would you say is the focus of the national unity ministry?
My department is focused in bringing the people together among the different races, including the people of Sabah and Sarawak. We mustn't forget that, you know, generally when people talk about race and religion, we are so peninsula-centric. Mm-hmm. We only think in terms of peninsular Malaysia. We tend to forget that there are people from Sabah and Sarawak who are also equally Malaysians. And our focus is to bring the entire Malaysian community together as one big family that understands each other.
there have been some concerns that we are seeing a rising tide of sectarianism here in Malaysia, or even the normalization of radical statements and language in recent times. Is this something that you're concerned about?
Well, yes, I am concerned about those statements created by certain segment of society, which I deem, they are not responsible towards the country. It is easy to say things and to stir up feelings, ill feelings among the races, but it's a tough job getting them to understand and unite in light of those statements. I think the people should understand that all of us come from a diverse culture, background, religion, and history. Our history is different. For example, some people might use the term pendatang, for example, but if we look at the history of migration into our country, we will realize that, it is not actually pendatang. For example, the Indians were brought into the country either by way of force or eventually by way of encouragement to come and mend the rubber plantations in this country. Similarly, there were encouragement towards the Chinese community to come into Malaya and to work in the tin mining industry. So if we understand the history of the migration, and if we understand the complications that arose after the Second World War, where the Chinese, for example, could not go back to China mainland due to China, the change that happened in China.
Yes.
I think if we understand that, and if we understand that there was a need during that time, immediately after the Second World War, for example, for the Chinese to remain in this country to ensure the economy of Malaya then was remained strong, and then which actually was the foundation for our country's economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we understand the history of the country in the true context, I think there will not be any labeling of any community.
I'm speaking with YBP Wethamurthy, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of National Unity and Social Wellbeing. After this, we'll get a little bit into the National Harmony and Reconciliation Commission, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with YBP Wethamurthy, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of National Unity and Social Wellbeing. Now, Minister, earlier we were talking about what national unity means to you, but now let's take a look at some of the measures that have been announced by your ministry, specifically the National Harmony and Reconciliation Commission. What is the status of that at the moment?
The department is working with various agencies on enacting a law for the National Harmony and Reconciliation Commission. And we are discussing with various parties, including Suhakam. So there's at the moment, there are two views, whether the commission should be a standalone commission or whether the commission should be part of Suhakam.
I see.
So there are discussions going on at various levels. In the interim, I have also had discussions with my friends from Australia and New Zealand, and they've kind of briefed me on the model that they have in their countries. They are kind of suggesting that it should be part of the mainstream Human Rights Commission.
Mm-hmm.
But we are still studying the matter, and we are looking at how best the commission would serve the Malaysians. So it is quite at an early stage. I think we will really come up with a concrete plan sometime next year. In the interim, we are also looking at models from, as I said, Australia, New Zealand, and other countries in the West to see what best would fit our country.
But what does a national harmony also, again, mean in this case? Because when we use these terms, national unity, national harmony, I think the concern is that at the end of the day, we may end up running into the same issues that we've had with previous legislations, in that these are very vague terms that could be used to allow people, including yourself at one point, to be detained for disagreeing with the governments of the day. So are there moves here to pin down what national harmony might mean, or specifically what you will be targeting with this commission?
See, when we speak about national harmony, we do not want to create a commission that actually, or laws that actually punish the people for saying the wrong things. Hmm. We are trying to educate the people. So punishing people will not bring harmony. I think the best way is to educate people on issues, on rights, etc. So the whole idea of the National Harmony and Reconciliation Commission is for people to, the aggrieved party, to have an avenue where they could complain, and the commission will be empowered to call the alleged offender of kind, or the alleged person who has caused the uneasiness, mm-hmm. To the commission, and it will play the role of a mediation rather than kind of punishing them. So the commission will take the role of getting the people together and kind of through a dialogue and see whether the issues could be resolved, rather than, you know, strictly applying the law and dragging them to the courts or to the police stations to have their statements recorded.
Will the commission have enforcement capabilities, though?
That is something that we are looking at. I'm for it. I think the commission should be empowered. But probably that may infringe upon other jurisdictions. That's why it's quite at an early stage. We have to look at the law. We have to look at the constitution, whether there will be any conflicts if the commission is empowered with mm-hmm. such powers, you know. So it will take a bit of time before we actually finalize these issues.
And Minister, I'm curious, how does your ministry actually measure its success when it comes to increasing national unity or increasing the social well-being of Malaysians? Is there a metric that you use?
Yes, we do. It's quite new. Our department has been working closely with the Institute for Ethnic Studies, UKM, KITA, and with our collaboration, they have produced an index which is called IPNAS, which will be a comprehensive model to measure the level of unity among the various races in our country. Again, it is at an early stage, and it will be brought to the public soon.
Do you have an indication of when it might be brought to the public?
Within the next, I think by year end, we will be able to brief the public.
All right.
On the index.
And Minister, Orang Asli issues are also parked under your ministry. Are there any measures at this point to include them in wider discussions about national unity? Because as you described earlier, when we talk about national unity, we tend to speak mainly about the three major ethnic parties here in Malaysia, the Malays, the Chinese and the Indians. But the Orang Asli are also, some might say, an increasingly marginalized community here in Malaysia. What kind of measures can we expect to see for them?
We are trying to solve the major problems. First thing, you know, when we talk about national unity, we must make the Orang Asli comfortable. If we look at their issues, their main issues circles around their land rights, mm-hmm. and their right to live their life. Whereas there are certain segments of the community or certain state governments, for example, which do not recognize their land rights. And that actually creates a lot of tension among the Orang Asli people, and hence they feel they are detached from the mainstream community. and they are not part of the country. So we had a national convention on Orang Asli, and in that convention, we gave them an opportunity to deliberate and give their ideas, and most of them insisted that the new government recognize their rights. So we are working out certain plans, and we are working out ways and measures that we from the federal government could do to recognize the rights of the Orang Asli towards their land rights. Now, having said that, we are also doing, under the new government, we are initiating various programs for the Orang Asli, and in conjunction with the National Day celebration. In fact, our International Indigenous Day celebration is being held on the 14th of September, 2 days before Malaysia Day in Tapa. So during the day, we have various events to coincide with Malaysia Day, and we are getting the Orang Asli's from all states to participate in the celebration.
I'm speaking with Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of National Unity and Social Wellbeing, YBP Wethamurthy. Stay tuned after the 8:30 news for this extended edition of The Breakfast Grill, where we will be taking a look at the Malaysia Advancement Party. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned to this special extended edition of The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with YBP Wethamurthy, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of National Unity and Social Wellbeing. Now, Minister, you were also the founder of HINDRA, for the Hindu Rights Action Force, which you have since left in order to form a new party, the Malaysian Advancement Party. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that and why you decided to set up a new party?
Well, there's a long story to it. Yeah, it's a struggle beginning in HINDRAF. After a long struggle in HINDRAF, I realized that I have certain limitation as a member of an NGO. Mm. So I realized, especially after the last general elections, that there is a need for me to either join a political party or form my own political party. I have, prior to the elections, made inquiries whether I'll be accepted in a number of parties, but I was not accepted. I was told that no, there was no need for me.
I see.
So I left it at that. For almost a year before the elections, I was campaigning as the leader of HINDRAF to canvass the Indian voters to vote for Pakatan Harapan. Mm-hmm. After the elections, or slightly before the elections, I realized that I can't remain as an NGO forever. For the simple reason, I asked that HINDRAF be given an opportunity to take part in the elections. And I made requests for seats, both at parliament and also at state levels, to be given to HINDRAF to contest. But I was told that being an NGO, they could not offer me any seats. So after the elections, I had a number of discussions with my friends and my supporters, and we decided that if we wish to take the struggle at the next level, we need a political platform. So therefore, I formed the party. Mm.
But as an NGO leader, you made quite a lot of strides, because you were the first NGO leader to be appointed to the deputy minister's position at that time in a cabinet under Barisan Nasional. And you're also the first NGO leader to be appointed minister, full minister, now under Pakatan Harapan. So as an NGO leader, what do you make of some allegations that the Pakatan Harapan government has started losing its core support from NGOs and civil society as a result of perhaps not engaging with them enough?
Yeah, I think it is fair to say that. I have been in touch with many NGOs and civil societies who have expressed their displeasure with the current government for not being
transparent enough. Perhaps.
Transparent enough to do certain things and to keep up to the promises made during or before the elections. I think there's still time. You know, we are slightly more than a year since we came into government, and I hope the civil society and NGOs will remain with us, give us a bit more of time. As you know, I come from that background as well, and I think it's a big challenge since we took over the government. It's a big challenge to implement certain things, but I think. Not only me, I think my other colleagues as well in the cabinet should engage more NGOs and civil societies, and we should keep up with the good relations that we had prior to the elections.
Now, coming back to the MAP, Minister, so now that you have set up a political party, can we expect to see the MAP contesting in GE15?
We intend to do that in the next elections, but it's still a long way, you know. And we too are new, and we are developing branches throughout the country, and we are identifying good leaders who could take up positions in the party. So it's quite a way.
Would there be concerns that in the transition to a new party and a new name, that you might be sacrificing the history and the clout of the name Hindraf? Because Hindraf is a name to conjure with. You know, people recognize it immediately, whereas not a lot of people yet will know what the MAP might stand for.
Yes, I do agree with you, but Hindraf would remain. Doesn't mean that I've resigned from Hindraf, that Hindraf will no longer be there. We have other leaders who have taken over the leadership, mm-hmm. and they would continue the advocacy of the plight of the marginalized Indian community. But at the political level, it is something new. You are right. You know, it's new. People are not aware of the party. It's new. MAP is not known, but it takes a bit of time. For us to be able to go to the grassroots and explain to the people what the party is all about.
Why the decision to set up another race-based party here in Malaysia? Because, you know, you are minister in charge of national unity, and initially at the news might have seemed surprising, because shouldn't we be moving away from race-based politics if we want to become a politically mature, advanced society?
I think when people, I know I've heard this criticism that being a minister for national unity and I'm formed a party, an Indian-based party. Let me put it this way. We have four parties in the coalition. The Prime Minister belongs to a Malay party. So just because he belongs to a Malay party, can he be a leader of all communities? So similarly, Amanah is a Malay Muslim party. Can a Malay Muslim party lead, their ministries that actually cuts across the needs of all communities? So similarly, this is, I think we should distinguish between the position in cabinet and my right to form a party to represent my political interests. I see that for a long time, I've seen this, that there is a vacuum in the leadership among the Indian community. We have been sidelined and marginalized for far too long. The plight of the Indian community has not been advocated in the right manner. The leadership of the country do not understand the real plight of the community, because Malaysians generally do not understand the plight of the Indian community. So therefore, I think that if I want to advocate their rights politically, then I need a political platform for them.
Now, Minister, for a final question, what are some of the new initiatives that your ministry is working on at this point and going forward into the next 3 years of the Pakatan Harapan administration?
I have initiated various other programs with the Department of National Unity, and I've encouraged them now to engage civil societies, mm-hmm. NGOs, the private sectors, academics, etc. So we have kind of formulated various programs where we work in collaboration with these civil societies, NGOs, and private sector. Let me give you an example. In our engagement with the Association for Malls in Malaysia, we were told that 70% of the population frequent to the malls during the weekends. So we thought it's a good idea to collaborate with the malls to carry out unity programs at the malls during the weekends, where large number of people from all races converge at the malls. So we are engaging the malls, we are engaging companies, large companies that have many workers, where we could hold certain unity events at the workplace and create unity among the various races who are working in the factories, for example. So happy workers will actually increase the productivity of those companies. You know, those are the some of the initiatives. Apart from that, we are also engaging with civil societies and NGOs. There are many NGOs in this country who are doing unity events on their own initiative. Now, I feel that unity doesn't belong to the government alone. Unity belongs to all. And there are so many responsible organizations who are carrying out various activities. So I have encouraged the Unity Department to engage them and to collaborate with them and do activities that actually promote unity.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Minister.
Thank you very much. And to all listeners, I wish Selamat Hari Kebangsaan.
Indeed. I'm speaking with a minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of National Unity and Social Wellbeing, YBP Weta Murthy, on this extended edition of The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9.